there was a real confluence of factors that we've seen both statewide and nationally really centralize in this small location. Protests over COVID-19 orders, questions over election integrity, and also, you know, just a real sort of animosity towards public health officials.
That volatile mix has turned life in the small town of Calumet upside down. Will it ever be the same? This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. With a vaccine in distribution, it feels like there's light at the end of the pandemic tunnel, even if that light is quite a distance away. But in a small town in the western Green Bay Packers-loving part of the Upper Peninsula, the fight against any change in daily life due to COVID has raged and continues to rage as maskless patrons crowd a local cafe that is ignoring state orders at every turn. Jonathan Osting is a reporter at Bridge, Michigan, and he's been looking into the rise of right-wing extremism in the state. So when he learned that one of the men arrested for the January 6th storming of the U.S. Capitol was from Calumet, he headed up north. What he found was a political and social firestorm lit by frustration over the pandemic lockdown.
The local health official, Kathy Beer, told me that because the region wasn't hit as hard with COVID early on, like, say, Detroit, that really affected the perception of the pandemic up there and maybe led to some of the angst and anger we're seeing now.
It's hard because we didn't have that rush up front like everybody else did, so people got tired of waiting for it to show up. So they're very burnt out by waiting. And, you know, now that it's here, people are just tired.
At the center of this story is a cafe owned by a brother and sister that has been resisting the state's COVID rules and restrictions. It's called Cafe Rosetta. Would you tell us about it and its owners?
Yeah, so Cafe Rosetta is, you know, sort of a quaint cafe right on the main street in downtown Calumet, which, by the way, is really beautiful, has a lot of historic architecture from the mining boom back up there many years ago. But Cafe Rosetta has really just been flouting public health rules for months now. They actually had their food license taken away by the state, and they've lost some court battles over that, been fined for contempt of court for staying open. But they were very much open, you know, last week when I was up there. I actually went to that cafe and sat down with one of the owners, and the place was packed, and there were literally no masks there at all. Not much attempts at social distancing either. I did wear a mask, two of them actually, but I was the exception rather than the rule. And the cafe has really just become sort of a flashpoint in the region with folks who are protesting COVID-19 orders sort of rallying around the owner and dining there as well.
The owner, Amy Heikkinen, and her brother, did they say that their decision to stay fully open was a business decision or more of a philosophical and political one?
Well, it's certainly become a major political issue up there. You know, you've got lawmakers and county commissioners talking about it and taking sides. But yeah, they argue, Amy in particular I talked to, argues that, you know, she just didn't think she could survive if she had to shut her dining room down again during the last pause that Governor Whitmer and her administration ordered.
My goal is to stay in business and, you know, hopefully keep it that way, but beyond politics, you know, and I don't know if I told you that, but it's not political for me. It's just the right to work and earn a living.
She, says she's a mother of six who had fled an abusive relationship and, doesn't want to go back to, you know, food stamps or being dependent on others, and feels she's finally, you know, found some success as a business owner.
So, Jonathan, how have Amy and her brother been able to stay open? I mean, they've been fined. They've lost their food service license. What's going on here?
Well, that's a question I asked pretty much everybody, and the answer seems to be a lot of folks are saying, well, somebody else should do it. The court orders are a civil matter, the licensing dispute there hasn't been an order from the judge to forcibly shut down the cafe. So state police haven't taken that step. The county sheriff, you know, basically says he's just, you know, a middleman here. He doesn't have the authority to shut down the cafe either without a court order or a law strictly saying he should. Now, it's my understanding that under state health rules, you know, there's potentially a mechanism to take criminal action here, but the state has not gone that route yet. So for now, you know, the restaurant is, Amy told me she was going to pay the first contempt of court fine she had received and was hoping to still win back her food license on appeal. The matter is, you know, not over legally, and she's continued to keep trucking.
I think the situation is extremely unfortunate.
I spoke with Tanya Rule, who's a health official up there, and she's been the focus of a lot of anger from supporters of Cafe Rosetta and those resisting the COVID-19 orders that she's tasked with enforcing. Tanya says health officials are just trying to do their jobs.
I mean, I worked with Amy and her mom. I sat in the conference room with them in 2018 and helped them through the paperwork process, the plan review process to open their business. I, more than anyone, wanted her business to be successful. I was a customer of Cafe Rosetta prior to July of this past year. If you look in my wallet, I have two Cafe Rosetta punch cards. But I just don't think that, you know, if the whole thing is unfortunate, her personal opinion does not put her above the law.
There's another figure that looms large in your story, and that's a local businessman in Calumet. His name is Eric Killinen. How did he become sort of the flamethrower of this narrative?
Well, he's a local businessman who's, you know, been pretty successful. He owns a couple businesses in the region. And, you know, he initially started fighting COVID orders when one of his own businesses was briefly shut down. He created a group called All Businesses Essential, basically encouraging companies around the state. He did this even on billboards downstate to, you know, defy the orders, bring people back to work and treat all employees as essential, because at the time that was, you know, one of the delineation marks. He has really, you know, emerged as sort of the leader of this anti-government movement up there that's sort of fed into, you know, the conspiracy theories.
There is no pandemic. This is a manufactured crisis to allow Biden to steal an election, as far as I'm concerned. That's precisely what happened.
And although he acknowledges that COVID is real, he thinks that deaths are really blown out of proportion and just a part of life. So he's, you know, organized protests. He has taken out a full-page ad in the local newspaper to criticize the regional health department. And he's really rallied around Cafe Rosetta. And he's hired a public relations firm even to take their story national.
It's time for a quick break. In just a minute, Jonathan Osting has more on the Calumet man who was arrested for his role in the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
There's a man in your reporting, Jonathan, who got some attention for being part of the group that stormed the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th insurrection. He's a Trump supporter, a racist, and a conspiracy theorist. And he's also the adult son of a respected former state legislator. Can you tell us more about who he is?
Yeah, sure. So this is Carl Dresch. He's a 40-year-old man who was born nearby in Hancock, where his family lived, and had since relocated to Calumet. And really, you know, we don't know a ton about him. I wasn't able to talk to him or his family members because he is locked up still. But you know, we can see from his social media profiles and activity that he'd really gone down a deep rabbit hole. He was very immersed in this local resistance movement with Cafe Rosetta. He had eaten there. He had championed them for taking on the communist state government, as he called it. But more troubling than that, you know, he was really promoting, you know, the conspiracy theory that led to the Capitol insurrection, which was that the election was rigged to benefit Joe Biden over President Trump. He has suggested that if folks didn't do anything, quote, if we let this election get stolen, there's going to be war. He also, you know, really showed a sort of extremist streak earlier in the year, you know, when the governor was the subject of a kidnapping plot that was foiled by the FBI. You know, he lamented the fact that she got off on a technicality, meaning he hoped that those folks would have potentially kidnapped her and made what he would call a citizen's arrest of the governor because of her COVID-19 orders. And then on another social media channel that a lot of folks don't know about, it's called Gab. It was a real, you know, rallying point for conservatives at points when they were fighting Facebook. He really opened up there and exposed some deep racism. He used the N-word. He used racial epithets against Jewish people. He smeared gay people, and really, you know, showed sort of a very troubling side in the run-up to this. And sort of, you know, you can see a pattern emerging of how he became radicalized in the months leading up to the Capitol insurrection.
We should take a moment to just note that the median household income in Calumet, as you report, is about $21,000. That's household, not individual. It's just a very low figure, about a third of the average household income anywhere in Michigan. How much do you think the poverty of the region has been driving the political fire?
Well, I think it's a big part of it, certainly. I mean, this is a region that, you know, has gone through some really tough times. As I mentioned, it was a boom town at one point, still has this beautiful historic architecture, but it's fallen a long ways. And, you know, now there's a lot of folks who are struggling to get by. And the community is also, you know, trying to rebuild itself. There is a neat downtown scene still, and, you know, there's hopes that new development is going to come in. But there's a lot of just sort of fear, you know, that things aren't the way they used to be, which I think is another thing, you know, another factor that we heard from folks who really rallied around President Trump in 2016 and 2020, you know, longing for the way things used to be. And you can definitely get that sense in Calumet. Now, the village of Calumet is just a tiny pocket in a larger region. There's a lot of communities surrounding it. And in some of those communities, there have been some folks moving in from other parts of the state or country that are bringing a new perspective there. And they're the ones who are really feuding, in some respects, with the, you know, anti-COVID regulation folks. And it's set up this, you know, really tense dynamic between folks who, you know, are taking COVID seriously and folks who are not taking it seriously. There's been, you know, verbal altercations on the street. There's been a lot of name calling on social media. One local business owner told me she knows folks are hesitant to come downtown because of the, you know, demonstrations that have happened at Cafe Rosetta. So while I was up there, I spoke with Roy Britz, who's one of the Houghton County commissioners and is also a deputy police chief at Michigan Tech University in Houghton. And he, you know, expressed some real fears about what was happening up there. Here's what he said.
Absolutely. I think that we're at a tipping point. I think that there's risk of civil unrest at any given moment. People are being tired of being pushed around, and people are tired of not being able to live their lives.
Jonathan, do you know if any of the people you talked to for your story contracted COVID?
I don't know if they, you know, I didn't talk to anyone directly, but certainly it's, you know, around around Christmas time, there was a spike in cases. The school, the middle school was shut down last week because of a recent outbreak. Eric Kalunin, the local business guy, you know, he told me actually he knows a few people, including both his parents, but that still doesn't really concern him because they both survived.
COVID exists. Do you die from it? 99.5% don't. What better? So we shut down the world for this? Yeah, get real. And yeah, you don't want it. You know, has my family had it? Yep. And guess what? My father just had it recently. He's just recovering right now. My mother had it, then hardly heard her. And they're 83.
Is he aware of the overall death rate in Michigan and in the United States?
He is, yeah. While I was there, though, he was pointing to a now, you know, mostly debunked analysis of CDC death statistics, and he was suggesting that the death rate, you know, actually isn't all that unusual. That's not the case, I mean, according to public health officials, but it's an argument he was making. He also, you know, spent a lot of time railing against heavy-handed government, suggesting, you know, tyrants of the past, like Pol Pot or Mao Zedong, have been responsible for more deaths than this pandemic, which, by the way, he doesn't think is actually a pandemic. So, yeah, he you know, basically questions the data.
Jonathan, you have these two realities throughout the state of Michigan when it comes to COVID. While the virus has now reached every county in the state, there are definitely pockets that are averse to any kind of action. And it seems like it does depend, in no small part, on where you live. How does this kind of sentiment spread across a small community like Calumet?
Well, you know, I think part of it is online. I mean, even though it's a small town, information is traveling fast in chat groups. You know, it's allowed folks in a region like Calumet that maybe they're not as closely connected to make those connections online. Eric Kalunin is part of what he calls a Patriots group up there. I understand there's been, you know, sort of organized via email, but they, you know, he said folks started showing up at meetings last fall, and there were about, you know, 20 to 30, 40, 50 people. And he said that's jumped to 250 in recent weeks. Also, you know, the presidential election, I think, played a large role in sort of stoking the flames of you know, these conspiracy theories that had already been circulating. There was, you know, a large, you know, car caravan that went through the region, sort of protesting the election after it happened. And, you know, several folks, Eric included, who did go to Washington, D.C. as well. Eric said he didn't participate in the storming of the Capitol, but he was there and believes the believes the pandemic has been overhyped to orchestrate Joe Biden's election win.
What would you say all of this has to say more broadly about the political divisions in Michigan and maybe the entire U.S. and how they've deepened in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very illustrative of that. And it's sort of a sad state of affairs. You know, a lot of people I talk to up there, you know, still consider you know, youpers to be friendly and cordial people and seem to be taken aback by what's happening in their own community. So, yeah, I think this is a microcosm of those dynamics we're seeing nationally. And, you know, it's a real open discussion about what happens next. And folks are grappling with how to heal those divides, just like they are at the state and national level as well.
Jonathan Osting is a reporter with Bridge Michigan. You can read his story about Calumet, Michigan online. Jonathan, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's show was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT with additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow.